Thanks, King. For those of you who think you've seen this title before, you have, because I'm trying to think. This is a study that was going on for 3 years, and sort of every time we got another 200 patients in, we summarized the data and presented it somewhere. And the bottom line is that oropharyngeal and rectal specimens are not specimens that are FDA cleared. So I'm supposed to specifically tell you this is an off-label use. Now, CDC recommends routine screening of MSMs for STDs, particularly including chlamydia and GC, but the only tests that are actually acceptable, unless people go through internal validation series, are culture. With GC, it's the standard GC culture with Thayer Martin and appropriate incubation, identification of oxidase positive, gram-negative diplococci, and then confirmation by one or of several methods to confirm. With chlamydia, it's cell culture. And if any of you saw the presentations about how many labs are doing cell culture in the United States now, it's asymptotically approaching zero. I think there are probably half a dozen labs, and three of them are represented in this room. So there's not a lot of this being done. Now, there are studies saying that NATS work. It's from LCR, which is long gone, and lots of other studies. So we were just trying to generate more information, hopefully to goose the companies into seeking clearance and to try to get the FDA to cooperate with them. Our first effort, we were doing all three of the currently available NATs, and that was Probetech, Becton-Dickinson strand displacement assay, the Optima Combo 2 from Genprobe, and Roche's PCR, the Amplicor. And you will note that Amplicor had a specificity of 79.5%. Now, the bottom line was, of the 51 positive Amplicors, only 12 were truly gonococcal infections from the oropharynx. In other words, the positive predictive value was something like 24%. So we stopped using this. And the reason for this is not there's anything wrong with the test. Their targets were not well chosen. And so they were using probes for genes that were present in commensal Neisseria, in at least three different Neisseria species. So we dropped that, and we went on just comparing Aptima Combo 2 and Probetech. We worked in the San Francisco STD clinic. It was non-selective screening. It was certain nurse practitioners or clinicians were collecting specimens, and whether the patients were symptomatic or clients were symptomatic or asymptomatic didn't make any difference. We got verbal consent. Multiple swabs were taken from each site. The swabs were randomized in order. CT and GC culture. The amplification tests came out of M4, or the Rammel's M4 medium. We did alternate amplification targets on anything that was uniquely positive to see if there were false positives. We accepted culture positives as true positives. We didn't go beyond that. If there were two separate NATs positive, it was considered positive, or a single NAT had to be confirmed. In other words, with the Optima tests, you could use the standalone. We did Optima Combo 2, and then they had the standalone GC and the standalone chlamydia tests to confirm the positives. About 60% of the men were symptomatic, and about 60% of them had urethritis or dysuria. Rectal ulcers and discharge were about 7 to 8%, and a similar percent had warts or some other rectal lesion. Pharyngitis was relatively uncommon, only 6%, and then miscellaneous findings. The prevalence of chlamydia and GC in this population was about 8% for GC in either oropharynx or rectum. Oropharyngeal chlamydial infections were relatively uncommon. Anytime you see a percent, it's a percent of nine, so ignore it. You've got to do something with the numbers, but with nine infections, I don't really want to get wrapped up in what is the sensitivity of a test with only nine positives. But with the others, we had reasonable samples of 68 to 89 positives. Rectal infections with chlamydia were 6.8%. As you can see, there were not really dramatic differences between symptomatic and asymptomatic men. The blue is asymptomatic. Whoops, sorry. The blue is asymptomatic, and the red is symptomatic. With GC, there was a slight tendency for a higher prevalence with symptomatic rather than asymptomatic men. With chlamydia, interestingly enough, there was more chlamydial rectal infections in asymptomatic men. Other people have seen this too. This is not unique. Now, the sensitivity. Sorry. Culture on oropharyngeal swabs for chlamydia or GC ran roughly 40%. And using Aptima Combo 2, you more than doubled the number of infections detected. The BD test was more sensitive than culture, but not as sensitive as the Aptima Combo 2. Specificity of all of the tests was quite good. On rectal swabs, you had a similar pattern. Chlamydia culture was relatively insensitive. Rectal specimens tend to be toxic to tissue culture systems, and they have to be diluted before you inoculate. Otherwise, you get too much toxicity from the direct specimen. So you probably wind up losing something in terms of sensitivity, but it's the only way in which you can do the test. Please note, none of the tests approaches 100% sensitivity. The best rate we're getting is in the lower to mid 90% sensitivity. And the same pattern holds. GC, always more GC than chlamydia around, so the lesser sensitive tests look a little better. Where you have less bug around, the tests with greater analytic sensitivity come to the front, so that you see a dramatic difference between Aptima Combo 2 and culture for chlamydia rectal infections. And while it is still a tremendous increment, it's not the same multiple as you see. The GC multiple is less than the chlamydia multiple. But the bottom line, of course, is that you are doubling the infection rate through the use of the more sensitive Aptima test as compared to culture, and culture is the standard test. So that means, and if these are generalizable results, that half the infections are being missed. Now, the other point, and I'm not showing the data here, but close to half of these men did not have urethral infections, which is the specimen that is automatically tested in all of them. So you get something like a two-third increment or doubling by testing rectal and oropharyngeal infection just in prevalence of chlamydial or gonococcal infection, because the urethral infections are not universal. Bottom line, the NATs are far superior to culture. The specificity is very high. We see a lot more oropharyngeal GC than we do chlamydial infection. Chlamydia were more common in asymptomatic men. No conclusions about chlamydia pharyngeals because we only had the nine positives. More people should be confirming this, and more people should be screaming that they want to use these tests and hopefully get the manufacturers and the FDA in a dialogue, maybe with CDC mediating it, to get the tests cleared for such use. Thank you very much. Well, that the pink and the blue is, are you dripping or not? Had nothing to do with the tests. Here's how you make a decision as to what test you're using. I mean, recognize that both NATs are much better than culture. So you make the decision as to what kind of commitment the lab has to a technology. If they're doing the Aptima tests, you want to do the Aptima tests. If they're doing the probe tech and they have the Viper and that's the platform they're using, you would probably have to do that. You can also see what the costs are. If you pick it purely on the basis of performance, you're going to take the Aptima.
No, but with the probe tech,
yeah.
There's a blue one for your reef.
Oh, you're talking about the size of a swab.
Yeah. Our lab will adjust the swab.
Okay. The question basically was, manufacturers supply kits with different size swabs. Okay, there is an endocervical swab, there is a urethral swab. The big fat endocervical swab does not fit into the scrawny little male urethra. Okay? Or it hurts a lot, you know? And what happens is they got hard-ass people in the labs who say, you're sending us a swab from a site for which that swab is not indicated in the manufacturer's description. And you got a problem with your lab and deal with them, you know, because it shouldn't make a difference.
What should you use?
Use either one, okay? You mean how many men have just a, at each site? Yeah, I mean, it's about half of each group. So you're basically, in this particular study, we added slightly over 40% by doing rectal and pharyngeals to what was detected by doing urethrals. In some other studies, it's been 50 or 60%, so you're doubling it, basically. And with us, it was close to half. In other words, there's a real significant subset of men who do not have a urethral infection, and they are detected by doing this.
Probably the positive predictive value for chlamydia, even with high specificity, would have been relatively low for oral pharyngeal. Because you had 9 positives and you said 99.7%.
So. You can't do any calculation. You can't believe anything with 9 positives.
Anyway, don't do it for chlamydia.
Yeah, no, I mean.
And how about, this was for MSM. Do you have any experience with rectal or pharyngeal for heterosexual populations?
How about the great understudied population? There are some papers and some stuff presented here is women, looking at rectal infections in women. And
any sense of what the additional yield might be?
There are a number of studies that show 15 to 25% with chlamydia. The GC is more variable. It really is a wide range. With chlamydia, we simply don't have enough information. And we also, by the way, don't know what these infections mean. It's another issue. Hunter? You tell people that if you have signed informed consent, there is a linkage available to the lab and the clinic because you have to have a record of it. Whereas if you get a checkoff box in their clinic form, no record is maintained, there is no linkage, my lab never sees a name. We know nothing about those patients. So we have been able to convince our IRBs that this is the way to go, and they have signed off on this.
So it's a matter of better confidentiality or even anonymity. Hunter, maybe a last question, and then we'll go ahead.
There's an easy way to think about this. That's probably going to be a logical conclusion as more people do this and if these results are borne out. But please remember that Chlamydia trachomatis is a pathogen of squamal columnar and columnar epithelial cells. The only place you find such cells in the throat, oropharynx, are in crypts, in the back of the tonsils. Yeah, those are the crypts. And the so most of the cells are squamous cells. They don't support the growth of chlamydia, whereas you have plenty of such cells in the gastrointestinal tract at, you know, pretty much any level. So it's unlikely to be able to find a place to effectively grow.
Thanks, Julie. I think we'll stop. And